There is no real Twitter wall, but
What are
we
you? You keep saying that. There's real
I'm
Twitter.
Telling, I need
yeah,
to tell
I'm
her
looking
the
at it
truth.
right now.
Yeah,
oh.
see?
See,
Yeah,
Ash, Hillary sees it. What's the problem here?
Yeah.
What's going on?
I don't know what Ash's problem is. All right, welcome to Rated NA episode 56 for the website nerdappropriate.com. We are all here remotely again.
Yes, yes.
A special guest.
We do. Hillary, Yay. You have to introduce yourself.
Hey.
Tell us all of your secrets right now.
Oh, wow. Hi, everybody. I'm Hillary Heskett Shapiro. I can't decide on my last name, apparently, so I use them both. I'm with Crabcat Industries. We do work with BioWare, and you've probably seen me around a con floor looking very tired, so I apologize for that. But yeah, we usually go around to conventions. I'm with Holly Conrad and Jess Kamirzin and Tank and Steph of Crabcat. Walking around in costume, scaring people, you know, the norm. It's the con thing.
That is awesome.
That's awesome.
And that's actually.
And I play a lot of video games.
Yay!
Excellent. You've definitely come to the right place. So how I stalked you into being on the podcast.
awesome.
I first met you very briefly at Comic-Con. I think it was last year, I want to say, at BioWare Base. And you were super nice during the costume contest and everything like that. You probably don't even remember meeting me because you were meeting so many people, but you were incredibly gracious to me and my wife. And I was like, that's a person that I want to become friends with. And
Aww.
Then slowly through the powers of the internet, we have become. So that's pretty cool. And I'm super happy to have you on the podcast. So
thanks.
That is excellent. Yeah.
No,
so what else
remember.
Do you do? Tell us your tales of adventure.
Let's see, what else? So during the day, not my nighttime job, I guess. That sounds kind of creepy.
Hey-o,
so during
nighttime job.
during the day, I'm a marketing director for a software company. So
Sweet.
Yeah, I pretty
cool.
much, you know, run marketing and PR for a company, which is kind of cool. So
awesome.
sometimes fun, sometimes stressful, but you know, you get through it. It gives
can
me
you teach us? Mm-hmm. Can you teach us to not be so horrible at marketing ourselves?
Yes, I can be a consultant. Yes.
Excellent. Going on year two, we still have no clue what we're doing.
Here's the deal: we will give you every ad cent we get for being a consultant for us.
Yeah,
that's a deal.
You're going to be rewarded. Get at least four of those Taco Bell Dorito tacos
yeah.
with the amount of money that we're making from the site. So,
well, we'll have to bump it up.
Well, that's cool.
Well, cool. Well, why don't you guys? She already knows a little bit about me, but why don't you guys give your own 30-second introduction? This will be good for people that are also listening to our podcast for the first time because we haven't really done this all too much. But Matt, what do you do? What is your secret life?
My daytime job versus my nighttime job. I do web development for Marvel Comics up here in New York. So that's why we're remote, because I moved out of Florida.
Yes.
Yeah, but I've been doing web for a long, long time, and that's kind of what sparked some of this site, I guess. Ash and I wanted to do it, and we did it.
We did it a lot.
Yeah, we did do it a lot.
Just kept doing it.
Just until we couldn't do it anymore. Which hasn't happened.
Oh,
so.
Oh, innuendo. Okay.
Innuendo.
Heyo.
Yeah. So that's kind of the short of it with me. And then Scott.
Scott has a secret job. Can
Scott
you even
does have a secret job. We can never know what he does.
No, I'm just really
Is
bad
it
at
a nighttime
explaining
or a daytime.
It. It's a daytime job. So I am a graduate student in a program called Modeling and Simulation. And I do research with, I do primarily military research with how people use unmanned ground vehicles and robots of the future for the military. If that's, I don't know. I'm not really good at explaining it.
Dude, you should have just been like, I'm a motherfucking doctor.
I'm trying to do that. So I'm currently working on my dissertation. So I do a lot of writing in my free time and in my not free time. So
awesome.
Yay.
And Ash is a pervert.
Yeah. I stalk the forest at night and I drag innocent people into the jungle and I do terrible things to them. And that's I'm a high school teacher.
That was a weird way to intro that.
Yeah, that's a great segue. I'm a high school teacher. I teach AP Honors World History to 10th graders, and then I write about video games all the time and love them and touch them.
The video games.
Yeah, that was a horrible segue.
Not the high school students.
Oh, jeez. Fired.
We were clarifying for you. That's all we were doing.
Yeah. So that's that. So let's go take a rundown now that we all know each other intimately.
Let's do the rundown.
So on today's podcast, we've got some news. This is about Mass Effect, correct?
If I'm not wrong. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got some Mass Effect news. We've got some PAX follow up. We've got news from our friend Jimmy Henson with Big Giant Circles. And then we sparked some Kickstarter stuff this week, which was kind of crazy. And we're going to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
Then we've got some reviews. We're going to talk a little bit more about multiplayer with Mass Effect. We've got Witcher 2, Fez, a new podcast I think Ash has been listening to. A few of us saw Comic-Con Episode 4, A Fan's Hope. There's the new Legend of Korra and a mobile game called Robotech.
Cool.
And then we've got our Twitter question of the week.
And our Twitter question was about dream jobs, either fantastical or otherwise, I guess jobs based in reality. And we got a pretty great response to that. So we're going to go over a lot of your Twitter responses about your dream job. And then hopefully with our magical powers, we will make them come true. We don't really have magical powers at all, but we'll sure try.
Yeah, we're really good at that.
Making
dreams come true.
So let's go ahead and just dive right in. Operation Exorcist is coming out, I guess, next weekend. We don't really know what it entails yet.
I thought you made that up.
Yeah, I thought you did too. I didn't know what – that's why I was like, wait, this is the same Mass Effect.
Last I checked, they actually hadn't released the details on what was in Exorcist, but I just kind of wanted to drop the fact that they're going to bi-monthly, so there's not going to be an event every weekend now. It's going to be every other weekend, which is fine. I mean, I think
pretty normal too, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's going to give us, I still haven't unlocked everything, and I play, you know, I play at least an hour or two a night, and I still have a lot left to unlock. So I don't feel like I'm at risk of like losing my faith in this game or in multiplayer. You know, it's like, I'm not going to run out of stuff to do is what I'm trying to say. You know, even with it being every other weekend.
Yeah. And you still need to stock up on your Metagel.
Oh, for real. Big time.
Did you run out for real?
I've been out for like a week. It's ridiculous. I can't get any. And I'm like I keep buying the new $99,000 packs because I want to unlock the new stuff, and it hasn't been giving me any Metagel.
Yeah, you gotta buy
those
play
for like
packs.
4 hours. I know, but I want to get all the new stuff. I still don't have a Geth. I want one of the Geth so badly.
I bought the Spectre one, got the Geth Infiltrator like right off the bat.
Yeah,
that's the best one.
Yeah,
that's the one I want. Sure, yeah, it's the best one. Thanks.
And I like play a quarter of the amount you play. It's just amazing that I get things that you can't have.
I got the Asari Justicar, and then and then in my bonus pack, I again unlocked the Asari Justicar, which is highly disappointing. But I love her now.
Don't you get like bonus experience and all that stuff for that?
Yeah, I mean you do, but I would rather just unlock something else. Other than customization.
That Krogan Vanguard is unbelievable.
I can't play Krogan.
A force of nature. Once you get the timing down for that charge, then it's all over. Yeah,
I need a dodge though. Like I roll constantly, and when I'm a Krogan, I just like, well, I'm gonna walk over here. Like, there's no rolling involved.
He's a bit cumbersome. What's your favorite class, Hillary?
Oh, that's hard. Probably the Justicar because I like her biotic bubble.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Do you ever get the double bubble going? Like we had two Justicars in a round, and there were like bubbles everywhere. It was
amazing. No, that's awesome.
Yeah, we were using bubbles like both offensively and defensively simultaneously. So the bubbles would be like so long with two people that when the enemies walked in, you were standing in the other one, and it was just total chaos. It was amazing.
That's
awesome.
So cool.
So what are the effects of the bubbles? Because I haven't unlocked her yet either, so I don't really know.
Well, you can kind of change it as you upgrade it. So when you power up, but yeah, I mean basically it decreases damage and increases damage for your allies too. So it depends on what route you take. Okay. But you can either make it more defensive or more offensive, I guess.
Excellent.
Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I did say, finally...
We're just offending people all over the place.
This is an offensive bubble.
I want to offend a banshee.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah. At the top of the chain, I think it does warp, too, which is, like, incredible. So you can do your own explosions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
very awesome. I finally did unlock both of the Batarians, and they're pretty cool.
Do you like them?
Yeah, they're growing on me. It's like a very different. The way they fight is very different from what I'm used to. So like they don't have the brute force of the Krogan in terms of melee, but they are very hardy. So you just kind of have to pick a very strong weapon and then just kind of realize that you're a little thicker than, you know, a human. So it's cool. I like it. It's different.
Yeah, that heavy melee is pretty impressive.
I know, the sound effect. I want to do that just to people in real life. You know, someone, like, pisses you off at 7-Eleven, and you're just like...
But by the time you actually connect, I mean, they're gone.
They've already gotten in their car and driven off.
Yeah. That is the one qualm I have with that class, is that charge move is so long. The enemy, like, walks halfway across the map, makes
they,
himself
like, get a
latte,
cup of coffee.
Yeah, like, calls its buddies. It's like, oh, I think somebody's trying to punch me back over there. Yeah, see you later.
So, Hillary, I know you've been playing a lot of multiplayer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Were you big into other, like, multiplayer shooters before this, or was this kind of the first one you really jumped into because it was Mass Effect?
Yeah, I think I was pretty much a multiplayer virgin with the exception of a little bit of Assassin's Creed multiplayer. But yeah, I mean, definitely Mass Effect multiplayer got me involved.
Yeah.
So yeah, BioWare can take credit for that.
I'm right there with you. I never did Call of Duty or Battlefield. Or I mean, I did Battlefield like 8 years ago, but not recently on the 360. And this is the first one I was like having so much fun doing it. I finally just started playing all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt that everybody else is playing it, too, and there's always friends to jump in with, you know?
It is amazing.
No, Scott, I'm independent. I did it on my own. It has nothing to do with all of you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great time. I'm glad there's a lot of new folks to play with, and it feels like, and not to just totally sit here and talk about multiplayer for the entire podcast, but it is nice to see the community grabbing on to the multiplayer and actually interacting. Like, I've met so many other Mass Effect, like, super fans just from playing multiplayer, and they're all, for the most part, really cool people. So that's great, you know. I love it.
Sweet.
Yeah, well, the thing that I love is that the community was also so skeptical about multiplayer, and now that it's out, they're like, yes, this is awesome. So...
I'm one of those people,
right?
Yeah, I was gonna say, I believe we have one of those here in the room with us.
I ate a lot of crow for that one. So
yeah,
Scott was a hater.
I'm a believer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now he's fully converted and he's ready for action.
Indeed.
Nice.
So this next story, I was gonna give a little background. PAX has a rule of no booth babes, as they call it, at all of their conventions, and it basically means that, you know, if you've ever been to a convention, you know, like there's a you'll see, like, the Sprint booth, and then there's girls just in, like, tight yellow skin suits for no reason whatsoever walking around, say, Sprint all over them, handing out free brochures that are about Sprint phones or something. Like, it's completely unrelated. They're very obviously hired just to be there to hand out stuff. And this year, something that I think kind of enters a very gray area happened, which is a cosplayer who was hired by a new game coming out, Lollipop Chainsaw, was actually kicked off the floor.
Yes.
So you can take it from there, Ash, because you know more about the background of this than I do.
So she's like a relatively famous cosplayer. Her name's Jennifer Nigri, and she you know does Comic-Con and does all the big shows and stuff like that. And she's known kind of for wearing, you know, very little clothing. That's sort of her thing, you know. But she
was
actually...
Is that really a thing?
that's her thing. Very little clothing. So that's why, I mean, not to be a dick, but that's why she's kind of famous, because she doesn't wear very much clothing. So she just being honest, sorry. Claim to fame. Wouldn't
real
work
talk
for me, but whatever.
Real talk.
It could work for you. You should try Borat or something at the next con.
You want to see some pale? So she first day she was on the floor, I guess she wore the regular lollipop chainsaw outfit, the one, the traditional costume that you see on all the posters and stuff at cons. And the second day she wore an alternate costume of lollipop chainsaw. So it was an actual costume, but it was, I mean,
is this
next
to one?
Nothing. All right. So day one, she wears the traditional lollipop chainsaw outfit. And day two, she shows up in the alternate costume, which is, you know, next to no clothing. And so the enforcer showed up and said, you have to either take that off or leave the floor. And so she had to actually get off the floor and change into something a little bit more suitable. But the question the reason I brought this up is what is too little? And if someone or a cosplayer is actually portraying a character from a game, is it different if they're paid, or is it different if they're doing it out of their love of the franchise? That's sort of what I'm asking.
I'm going to defer this one to the professional in the room.
Well, that's a really strange line, just because, you know, at Crabcat, we've been paid to be in costume. So, and we've paid to make costumes. We've been paid to make costumes. So, I mean, I guess it really depends. I honestly don't, and I might be going out on a limb, and I certainly don't want to represent, you know, Holly or Jessica on this, even though I think that they would agree. I honestly don't have an issue with even the pink outfit that she was wearing, because it was basically, you know, taking the game and then, you know, translating it into real life. While I understand PAX's concern, you know, with the family friendliness and stuff like that, it's kind of a gray area. So, you know, if you were going to do a costume like Ivy from Dead or Alive, more power to you. that would be pretty crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, I think it's hard to make a ruling on Booth Babes. Actually, we had a panel on it in Geek Girl Con. It's really hard. It's like, where do you draw the line? Overt sexuality is very present in games, and it's very present in society, and a woman shouldn't be afraid of that, you know, nor should they be looked down upon it should they want to portray themselves that way. But I understand the other side as well. So yeah, I mean, if she was being hired to wear the outfit from the game, I don't think that that's a bad thing. But maybe having looked into, you know, how PAX would feel about that, it would have been a smart move.
What if there were seven of the girls from Lollipop Chainsaw, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I think that's what always gets me, that a single person dressing as a character from a game, even if you're paid to do it by the company, seems kind of like that's what the game's premise is. I mean, it's not like we're all dumb and we think Lollipop Chainsaw is about, like, you know, the pro-feminist movement or something. It's about right. Skimpily dressed girls killing, I think, zombies, right? Is that what's in the anime?
All
the
sorts
game?
Of evil yeah. things. Yeah.
How about this? What if they just would have left her in the school bus the whole time? So like,
oh, like she
so
like,
to, like,
some,
her,
like some
so
creepy
like, are you 18?
Den.
Yeah.
Are you 18? No entrance for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta pay to see this cosplayer.
Yeah.
Just tip her on the way out.
Oh my god.
No, but in reality, like the stuff I've read about her is she's like super into cosplay. She makes all her own costumes, so she's hardcore. You know, in what she does, and she really, you know, she basically goes after these jobs that companies put out to, you know, represent their characters. And I think that's awesome. So I don't know. I'm on the fence about this one too. I understand what PAX was saying because it was a little much, but at the same time, she was representing an actual character from the game, and it was, you know,
it's
in my opinion, legitimate, right?
Kind of like you said, where they're drawing a black and white line where there's a lot of gray area, because there are plenty of people who aren't paid by anyone who dress just as, you know, skimpily, I don't know what the right skimpily is. That a word?
Scantily.
Scantily.
Skimpily. Skimpily. I mean,
can we create skimpily?
Well, you saw that. Did you see the Firefall? There's Crystal, who's a partner, or not a partner, but a friend of Crabcat's. She's Precious Cosplay. She was hired by Firefall to dress up like the main character, and though she's got a lot more clothing on, I mean, there are still, you know, big patches of skin showing. So, I mean, what's the difference really between?
My favorite,
you know,
part of that was when they carted the two of them around the con.
Yeah.
Like on a flat yeah. Yeah, I did see the Firefall cosplay, and it was really, really well done. And I didn't think that...
That was Steve Wang, so of course it's really well done.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That would make sense. Awesome.
Yeah,
well,
so
cool. I guess enough
brilliant.
About that. We'll see what happens with Lollipop Chainsaw and Jennifer Nigri at upcoming cons, because she is supposed to be representing that character. at a number of cons in the future, including Prime and SDCC. So we'll see what they have her dressed in and see if she gets in trouble again or what happens. So good stuff.
This next one's you, buddy.
Okay, so frequent friend of the podcast, Jimmy Henson, who was one of the composers on Mass Effect, he actually just released a free album for all to enjoy, and it's a whole bunch of Mass Effect remixes. It's 100% free. It's called Max Effect, and it's got a lot of energy. And the cool thing that I just noticed about this morning, actually, is that if you open up the album, and we'll put a link to it in the show notes, but if you open up the album, all the liner art and stuff is done by our friend Axel99, Jesse Lamb. And so she did a lot of really cool pieces. A lot of, you've seen her stuff before, so of Jack and Legion and stuff like that. So all that's inside the album for people to enjoy. And we'll also be featuring a track as bumper music a little bit later on. So definitely, if you're in the mood for some free music that is awesome, check out Big Giant Circles' Max Effect. And that's at biggiantcircles.com.
Yeah, and if you didn't pick up his last album, it was awesome. So pick that up.
Legacy?
Well.
Yeah, Legacy was really good.
It was really good. So yesterday, I was at work. You have to understand that being the guy who runs the website, every once in a while when I'm watching the Twitter feed, when I see certain things happen, like my butt clenches really tight, and I'm like, oh, God, and I like get on and try to like make sure the server doesn't immediately go down. And yesterday, Ash, without warning to me.
Sorry, I didn't know it was going to go either. It was a spur-of-the-moment thing.
Tweeted out that if you go to Bria Grant's new Kickstarter, or not new, Bria Grant's Kickstarter for Best Friends Forever, and donate, and then... or back it, and then let us know, like, prove it to us that you did, that we will buy you pizza at Comic-Con, which is awesome. I think it's hilarious. But I immediately texted him, and I was like, dude, you may be promising more than you might think you are promising right now. And then...
By the way, I was lecturing while you texted me that, so I was like, I would, like, turn around in, like, mid-sentence and check my phone and hope that my students didn't see what I was doing, and then turn back around and be like, I don't know what I just did.
So, in short order, I think Bria Grant retweeted us, and then right after that, a guy named Bad Astronomer on Twitter retweeted us, which, if you don't know who that is, it's Phil Plait, who's, like, pretty much one of the most well-known physicists in the world, and
that's awesome.
He has something like 200,000 followers on Twitter, and I immediately was like, oh, God, and I, like, went, and I was like, oh, good, he linked to the Kickstarter, not to our site, so our site won't shut down immediately. And then, of course, the retweets just start, like, flowing in, and then all this stuff, and the cool thing about it is that I was watching the, you know, this can't obviously be completely attributed to this tweet, but I was watching the funds, and they had been sitting at 62,000, and by the end of the day, they were up at like 68 or 69,000, I think. And now they're at 73. So hopefully we maybe helped in pushing a little bit momentum for them hitting 75 is their goal. And they're so friggin' close at this point. But by the time this podcast is over, it'll be done.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those that don't know what Best Friends Forever is or who Bria Grant is, Bria Grant, really just an acquaintance through cons and stuff like that. But she's the author of We Will Bury You. And she used to be on Heroes, and she's been in, you know, a bunch of horror movies and stuff like Halloween. But it's her directorial debut, and she shot it on 16mm, and she needs the $75,000 to cover post-production costs. And she's always been really friendly to our site, helping us out, and we've done interviews with her in the past and stuff. And when I got wind of this project, I was like, I just really want to help out and use, you know, the what little power our site has to, you know, just help out as much as we can. So we've been helping them tweet stuff out and, you know, kind of spreading the word. So the cool thing about this is if you're listening to this and you did donate to the best for, not donate, but you did help the Kickstarter for Best Friends Forever and you are going to San Diego Comic-Con, Bria is going to come to the pizza party that we are in the process of building. So, you know, show up, eat some pizza, talk about movies and comic books and horror and stuff like that. And we'll be there and Bria will be there and it'll be a jolly good time. And maybe Hillary will be there too, hanging out.
Yay!
If she's not working.
She is real deal. She's real deal in the comic books too. Yeah, your night job. Your night job's not keeping you busy at the time.
Yeah.
You can come have pizza with us. Yeah. But Bria Grant's like real deal in the comic books too. The We Will Bury You was an awesome zombie series that her and her brother did. And
yeah,
she's good people. But yeah, so
I think like I also have I'm also always in her corner because she was a history major in college and she wanted to be a teacher, but then she got famous.
Whoops.
And she's like, fuck that teaching shit. I'd much rather be famous, which I totally understand. So good deal. All right. So that's it for news. We're going to go ahead and take a couple minute break and get rid of all this coffee we've been drinking. And then we'll be back with a whole bunch of reviews, including Witcher 2, Fez, some new podcast reviews and a whole lot of other stuff. So we will be right back. Big Giant Circles from the album Max Effect, and the song was We Mako Our Own Luck. That is a play on words, and of course that's our buddy Jimmy Hinson, and you can download that album for free at biggiantcircles.com.
I was commenting earlier that I thought it was awkward or ironic that you used this song because you hate the Mako.
I do. I hate the Mako with all of my soul.
I hate the Mako
but this,
too.
I listened to all the tracks this morning, and this one was one of my favorites, so I was totally into it. So definitely download Max Effect from Big Giant Circles. It's free. Why would you not download a free album that is amazing and is filled with amazing art as well? So
maybe,
do
maybe
that.
Maybe you don't have the internet.
That's true. Then how would you listen to this podcast? do we hand deliver podcasts on vinyl? Are we that hit?
Yeah, I make 7 inches or 10 inches out of it.
And then... Wow.
Yeah.
I have a lot of free time. A lot of free time.
Every week you just mold a new 7-inch and distribute them to all your indie friends in New York.
Dude, I'm in Brooklyn, man. You have no idea. They don't listen to podcasts online. You have to deliver them by record or they won't listen to them. They take their high-waisted, high-water pants and head out.
And their mustaches, right? Hipster mustache.
And their suspenders.
And a bow tie.
And a bow tie.
Bow ties are coming back. What is that all about?
I don't know, man. I don't get it.
He came to me the other day and asked me how to tie a bow tie, and I just looked at him and said, no.
Nope.
All I said was, no, I'm not telling you.
At least once a day when I'm out in Brooklyn, I just kind of go like, just shake my head. Like, oh, man, what is coming?
I think we should become a steampunk.
Oh, yeah, you're in L.A., I forget. Yeah, same difference, you know.
Yeah. We're the first ones.
Oh, I don't know.
New York versus L.A. No. It's like a Biggie Tupac rap battle.
West Side?
Don't shoot, guys. It'll be okay.
The only problem is I've only been here 6 months. I don't really have that much. I'm not like solidarity to New York at this point. So,
yeah.
Well, anyways.
We already talked a bit about.
Yeah. Hardcore. Yeah,
we are podcasting right now, you know.
Ash, why don't you leave the room?
It's very organic right now.
I'm just kidding. So we already did talk a good deal about the Resurgence Mass Effect multiplayer. So let's go ahead and give that a pass and put Hillary in the spotlight because she's been playing The Witcher 2 for Xbox 360, or at least has started to play Witcher 2. And I have a million questions. But so let me start out with how are you liking The Witcher 2 on the Xbox 360?
I have to say that I think you and I talked about this before. It is not a BioWare game. So, so you know, I'm so conditioned to you know, BioWare's emotional engagement and all of that. So it was kind of hard jumping into such a big game without a lot of the stuff. I mean, a lot of the story I hadn't heard before. I didn't play The Witcher 1, I guess, on PC. So a lot of it was kind of, you know, had to be explained to me. The combat is pretty good. You can skill, or you can set your different trees, like alchemy, swordplay, and magic, which is kind of cool. And if you like boobs, you will love The Witcher 2. Just throwing that out there.
Sold! Yeah.
Already, seriously, the first scene, I was like, oh, hello, naked woman. Like, really naked. Really? Not like BioWare naked, like where they have the little bra. But like naked. I was like, what is going on here? This is like video game porn. But yeah,
I have to ask you this really quick. Do you ever have those awkward moments where your husband walks in like right during like a sex scene in a video game and just kind of looks at you like, what the fuck are you doing? Like I swear my wife will be like out of the room completely. And it'll be like, she'll walk in and like Liara will be like on the bed, like rolling around, like with nothing on. And I'll just be like, you just came in during the 1 minute of my 60-hour experience where this is happening, and she just thinks that is happening consistently in these games. So does that ever happen to you?
Yeah, in The Witcher 2, it does happen a lot. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So there's quite a few opportunities to have a bevy of naked women around your character. Yes, good use of word there. Exactly. No, yes, that has happened to me, and Dave, who's my husband, kind of sits down and like, you know, like, oh, is this really? This is kind of awkward, isn't it?
And then you're like, shut up, go make me a sandwich. I'm sleepless.
Hold on, I'm dealing with Caden right now. Go away.
Oh, burn.
Amazing. So are the sex sequences in Witcher 2 quick time sequences where you have to, you know, XY?
No, thank God. No, they play out just like a Cinemax movie. So
okay. Sweet.
A lot of fog filters and slow motion and maybe some smooth jazz playing in the background.
Yeah, I mean, the voice acting, I have to say, rises. I was going to say the voice acting throughout the game is just kind of okay. It's it's not completely like, oh my God, that's Jennifer Hale and that's amazing. But yeah, during the sex scenes, I can tell that they're really into it. So it gets a little like, wait, what am I doing here? I want to fight some enemies. Like, why am I doing this? Okay. Yeah. But it's kind of cool. Go ahead.
I'll say that.
I was going to say that I could tell you that in the Witcher 1, betting women was a very big gameplay mechanic, in the sense that every time you slept with somebody, you got like a card almost. And I don't think there's a way to go back and look at those trading cards, but that's basically like how they treated it in the game. So like every time you'd sleep with somebody, you like there would be like the same pre-rendered like scene in the background, and it'd all be kind of like red, like red light style. And then they would give you like a trading card. And it would be like artwork of the woman, like naked, like in a seductive pose.
Are you
or something.
Serious?
Yeah, and it was like it was super simple. Like
there's
most
a lot
sometimes,
wrong with that.
There's a lot wrong with that. Like collect your sex. Yeah.
I know.
And sometimes it would just be as easy as like going into the pub and like chatting up the waitress, and then she's like, "What are you doing later?" And he's like, "I don't know. Let's go find out." And then like boom, there it was.
Doesn't this guy look like Edgar Winter? Like, isn't he like white haired and like creepy old? Uh-huh. No one knows who Edgar Winter is. He's a creepy old rocker dude with like white hair. He's had it since the 70s and he's gross looking. How's this guy bet anyone? It just seems ridiculous.
He's the Witcher, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So I don't know what a Witcher is. What is the Witcher?
That is a really good question. So apparently humans call him Mutant. And basically, somehow he died and was brought back by a sorceress or something. So yeah, I actually was. This is really bad. I was actually like being through or Xing through the dialogue options because I was like, this is a lot of words.
That's when you know.
Not enough boobs.
No,
just
it's
kidding.
Like a BioWare title. No, I'm dead serious here. That's when you know, like, we've become very spoiled because all of us here at the site, and including yourself, are huge fans of BioWare. And they have broken a lot of video games for me. Like, I mean, not to diss on Kingdom of Amalur, but I could not play that game just because I had really gotten spoiled because of the depth and the complexity of the relationships in BioWare games and the quality of the voice acting.
Well, but isn't The Witcher...
It's hard to go back.
The Witcher is like a pretty hardcore RPG though, right? I mean, isn't a lot to do and manipulate in the game?
Yeah, I was just going to say, so after the end of chapter one, you basically have a choice. You can go one of two directions and the game is entirely different. And I'm the kind of person that when faced with a choice, I go on forums and like checking out what does the opportunity cost of me picking this one over that one. So yeah, you can either go with this guy that's trying to find the Kingslayer, kind of like you, that you've met before in the past. I'm not going to give away the story. You can go along with him, even though he's kind of an asshole. Or you can go with this like freedom fighter elf guy who's, you know, kind of scary and crazy. And they're both shades of good and evil. So there's not one clear path. Of course, I went with the crazy elf freedom fighter person. So I'm experiencing the game that way, which is really actually quite cool. And I can say that the story has picked up a lot in chapter two. So chapter one, I was like, I don't know about this, but yeah, there's an awful lot to do. You can craft armor, you can craft, you know, swords, and it's a lot of really cool fighting maneuvers and magic. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely building. It just was slow to start. I think if you have already invested time within the Witcher kind of saga, you'd probably really, really like all of the explanation at the forefront. But because I was kind of coming in like, I want to slash some dudes. Yeah, it was kind of difficult for me.
Awesome. So would you recommend that if we are fans of RPGs and BioWare titles that we might actually enjoy The Witcher on 360?
I'm finding that the more I'm away from it, so like even right now I'm like, I wonder if I can squeeze in some Witcher time today. So I'm definitely liking it more now. I think just give it time. I mean, let it kind of grow on you and you'll find that it's something that you want to play a lot. I mean, I've literally spent like 15 to 20 hours in it already. So,
Has it made you want to go back and revisit Witcher 1, or are you just kind of happy with what you've got in Witcher 2?
I'm not really a very strong PC player. I'm very much a PS3 or Xbox player. So, unless it was released on a console, I probably wouldn't pick it up.
None of us here blame you.
I can give.
We were all PC players long ago, but it's just gotten too. I'm too cranky and cantankerous for that anymore.
Yeah, I really do. I really do want to get into League of Legends. I really do. So I think I'll get over my.
I don't know that you do, honestly.
Yeah.
Did you see that booth? Did you see that booth? They're crazy.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to go down there?
Yeah, I actually went down after they were tearing down, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to see the
I did it. I think on Twitter the other day, Holly Conrad mentioned something about wanting to get into League of Legends, and I was like, you need to be careful, because from what I hear, that game is like heroin. Like, it is, once you start playing that game and you get involved in it, it is incredibly hard to ever stop playing, which it means it's a great game, but I have the most addictive personality in the world with games, and I'm terrified. I'm really terrified of getting involved in something like that again.
Well,
their
also,
company's hiring like 200 people right now, too, so they're like totally blown up.
Yeah, they are.
Riot's a great company. And actually, Jesse Houston, who was the senior producer on Mass Effect, now works at Riot. And then Christina Norman, who's one of the development gurus. Awesome, amazing person.
She's
at Riot, too. So, yeah, they're both ex-BioWare. So, you know that they're bringing stuff to the table. And they're awesome people, too.
Riot's out of L.A., isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, they're local.
Maybe I will check out League of Legends and just say goodbye to my life.
Yeah, you know, today it's like 80 degrees, right?
Yeah, well, it's like 70 here. Boom!
Oh, gosh, here
we
go. Big scoop off. Here we go again.
All right. So the other night, we were all playing multiplayer Mass Effect, and you guys had a full team, so I just joined the party, was hanging out, and I had downloaded Fez and started playing it. And you guys started laughing because I think all that was happening was me going, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What is that? Like, the entire time. So Scott picked it up after I told him to. Ash did not after I told him to absolutely. And,
sorry.
Yeah.
I have not gotten as far as Scott yet. I was busy putting IKEA furniture together last night. But I have to say, the distance that I've gotten, I have hit absolutely nothing that I've hated yet. And the beginning to the game is, which if you don't know, Fez is the new Xbox Live Arcade title. It's been basically talked about for a year plus now. I think it's won best of show at two different of the same conference because it's been in production for so long. I want to say it won best of show at GDC a year ago, and then won best of show at GDC again this year. The concept is that you start out in this 2D world, this crazy kind of... Do you agree with me, Scott? It was like straight out of like 2001, the whole moment with the cube and...
Oh, yeah. I mean,
like the spinning and like everything just goes nuts all of a sudden.
Sadly, the demo kind of ruins that. It doesn't start the same way that the actual game starts, but yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. The moment, if you just bought the game and started playing, the moment it goes from 2D to 3D is absolutely mind-blowing. It's just an amazing piece of game art, I feel like. And then the mechanic changes to where now you're a 2D character on a 2D world, but you can hit one of the triggers to rotate the world 45 degrees left or 90 degrees left or right.
Oh, I've seen that.
And then once you do that, amazing. It opens a different part of the stage up, essentially. So as you're moving through, you can rotate it. And as you rotate it, you'll see different things. You can jump to different areas. Different doors will open up. There's even points where, depending on what layer of the world you're in, it kind of affects how you can play in that the level of the game that you're on at that point. They do some amazing things with audio, where when you're back behind things, the audio kind of like fades out and sounds really muffled. And then as you move out into it, the audio comes back in. It's just very immersive. The sound is fantastic. It's all 8-bit. The style is all 8-bit, but looks gorgeous. And then it is a puzzle platformer from there on out. Your job is to collect these little mini cubes that make a bigger cube. And every time you collect enough big cubes, you can move to the next level of the game. So Ash would hate this game.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you would despise it. You would absolutely.
I actually saw it at East last year, East 2011. And I was watching another game journalist play it. And I just was like, I was in line to play it, and I watched him play it for like 5 minutes, and I was just like shaking my head the whole time, and I walked away.
Ash hates puzzle games.
I hate puzzle games, and I'm not a big fan of platformers, so it's like, yeah, it's a double dosage of things that I don't really care for, so I'm sorry. But in all honesty, it looks like it was definitely designed by a savant who has like a level of this crazy brain that I don't even really comprehend, but I fully respect Fez, but it's not something I'll ever play.
So the closest comparison I could probably give it is probably like Braid, I guess, with just they're different mechanics, obviously, but same kind of idea of a game. I got really frustrated with Braid for multiple reasons, but one of them was I really didn't enjoy the puzzles. It was all about like, where can you jump? You know, kind of, it just felt weird to me. I never really got into it.
Yeah.
But I want to hear, because Scott kind of teased me right before the podcast saying he hit something in the game that he did not enjoy, and I want to know what that is.
Yeah, there's actually, if you continue to play the game sort of past whatever the end game state of the game is, there's actually puzzles that sort of take place outside of the game. So they're not like, let me put it this way, I don't want to say too much, but the puzzles aren't all just like platforming for cubes.
Okay.
Like, ultimately, like, the puzzles become something else, and it reminds me of, like, things that PC games required you to do, like, back in the 80s. So,
is that are they doing that kind of on purpose, you think, though? Because that's what the whole game is, like, premised on 80s video games.
Sure. But, I mean, like, I've already done my pencil and paper note-taking, you know, like, 20 years ago. I don't want to do it anymore. So, like, that part of the game... And that's really like, it makes it sound like I hate it, but I actually do really love this game. It's just that one particular aspect of the game I'm not totally stoked on. But aside from that, the game is subtly brilliant in so many ways in terms of the way that levels transition together, the way that the map is somehow intuitive to read. Like when you're trying to figure out where you're going and how to get from one place to another, it's like you're totally inside of this creator's like mind of how he conceives these puzzles and stuff. And it's just brilliant to think about all the things that he planned out ahead of time to make the game work in the way that it does.
Yeah. It really is probably one of the most intuitive ways to navigate a puzzle, too, I feel like. I don't ever feel like the mechanic got in my way. And maybe that's what bothered me about Braid, was there were plenty of times where I was like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I have to jump and then reverse at the perfect time and then do, you know, like, whereas Fez really feels like the rotating and how you're moving through the level just feels right. Like, as you're doing it, everything just works and kind of moves the way it feels like it should. I mean, there's tons of challenge, but it's not,
yeah,
it's not like, I don't know, it seems like he doesn't ever get up his own ass about how the mechanic of the game works inside of the puzzles.
Okay. So
you don't agree?
You'll see. But later, anyways,
something happens that will change your opinion.
But I mean, are these puzzles you're talking about? Is this a completionist game?
It's literally a puzzle up someone's ass.
You've already beaten the game, and then
an ass.
Let ass. We're just talking about asses. Hold on.
Yeah. You have to navigate your way out of an ass. And Scott, that's what Scott's trying to tell you. That there's literally an up the ass puzzle.
Like, right, if you want to, like, yeah, it's a completionist thing. So if you want to, but you're going to need like a pencil and a paper. You know what I mean? Like, it's that.
Right. But now we're talking about two different kinds of gamers. There's the one who has 80,000 gamer points and must do 100% of everything that he plays. And then there's the guy who will happily finish a game, put a controller down, and never visit it again if he doesn't feel like it.
Yeah. And you'll be happy.
Like, all right.
And the thing that I do want to, I make it sound so negative. I do want to say positively that throughout this experience, the game has continued to show you things that you're like, oh, really? You know, like, the game doesn't have the same tone throughout, like, in terms of its, like, level design and the things that the game asks you to do. And as you get further along, you, like, the levels start to have themes to them, like the worlds or whatever. And it's just a really brilliant presentation as far as the game goes. I don't know if you've experienced this too, Matt. The thing I will say about the game is that there's a lot of frame rate problems. Like,
oh, I didn't hit that. No,
I'm experiencing a lot of like jerkiness with the game, like in game transitions, and like sometimes when the game is trying to save. Like,
I think it happened a couple times on like rotate for me, but it wasn't anything super noticeable.
You might find a level in the game that if you were maybe prone to epileptic seizure, like you might have one, but. This is sort of a technical problem, and it's not one that I put on the game creator, but I wonder why the sort of like the optimization for Xbox wasn't better in this like release. That's my only sort of like outside of the game complaint is that the frame rate gets a little weird sometimes.
But. Well, I do think he is like a micro studio. I think it's him and maybe I don't think it's a lot of people working on this.
Oh yeah, I mean
which it's just part of it probably.
Yeah, I think it's just like one or two guys or whatever. But
so but
I don't put that on him.
The game is $10 regularly. If you are a fan of platformers or puzzles or Xbox Live Arcade games in general, I would say definitely pick this up. If you're not, if one of those things is kind of like, I'm not sure, I'm sure it'll go on like a sale in a month or two and you'll get it for $5 or $7 and it's 100% worth that price. So
it's like a totally brilliant world to explore.
Yeah.
And if puzzling's your thing or hardcore puzzling's your thing, like it's definitely for you.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you guys liked it.
I can't stop playing it. I probably played like 7 hours in the past 2 days. It's ridiculous.
I saw you on there. I was going to invite you to Mass Effect multiplayer, but I saw you doing that, and I'm like, well, he's probably going to want to review that for the podcast, so I'll leave him alone.
Oh, no. At that point, I probably had already played 4 hours. I mean, just send me an invite and break my trance or whatever.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. So, Ash, we have new friends on the internet?
We do. Oh, yeah. So,
oh, yeah, the podcast. Sorry. Hey, everybody.
You guys were talking about puzzle games, and I was doodling a sketch of myself being sad. sorry. I'm a creep on the internet. Well, not a super creep, but when people follow us on Twitter, I tend to see who that person is just out of curiosity. Because I'm curious who the hell would want to follow us. it always baffles me. I'm like, people liked something we did or something we said. It's always like a brightens your spirits a little bit. So, I saw one of our followers the other day was another podcast called Press to Reset. And, anytime a podcast follows us, I'll listen to that podcast because that is the least I can do. And plus I drive about 40 minutes each way every day. So I have a lot of time to kill in the car. And so I listen to a whole lot of podcasts. And so I went and checked out Press to Reset, and I was really, really, I really enjoyed it. It's really lighthearted. It's a lot of fun. It's similar to our own podcast in that it is not really about anything in particular. It's just about stuff that the cast enjoys. There are about 37, I think 38 episodes in now, so that it's not like a, you know, a flash in the pan 1 through 5 podcast that'll just disappear and you'll never hear from it again. They're in it for the long haul. So if you guys are looking for a new podcast, this one's cool. It's actually two girls and a guy, and they have a really, really great dynamic, great banter. It's very, very funny. They're completely ridiculous. They're huge Mass Effect fans. You know, and they talk about it constantly. So that makes me happy as well. But check out the podcast Press to Reset. It's on iTunes, and enjoy it and let us know what you think.
Cool.
So that's it. So, Scott, you got a chance to listen to it, right?
Let them know what you think.
Yeah, let them know what you think.
Yeah. Come tell us what you think of their podcast.
Well, we can forward the information. We can let them know.
And you can tell Press to Reset what you think about our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. This would be good. It's synergy.
And they'll send it to us.
Synergy.
Yeah.
Did you listen to an episode though, Scott?
I did. It was good. Good times.
You liked it?
Yeah, I did.
They're pretty funny.
Like you said, it reminded me like a little bit of us, like just regular banter.
But that's why we like it, obviously, because
because we only do things that remind us of us
that we like them.
Yeah. It's got to be us or we don't care. Honestly.
Yeah. Hillary, do you listen to many podcasts? Are you a podcast nerd, or are you like your sanity and not listening to other people talk all the time?
No, I do. I do like podcasts. I would actually say that one of the best ones is called The Perfect Squares.
You mean Nerd Appropriate?
Well, yes, maybe Nerd Appropriate. But yes, no. But one of the best ones out there that's not Nerd Appropriate that you should listen to is The Perfect Squares, and it's Jessica Marazin, you know, of Crabcat and Bioware fame. And Lizzie, who's our mad scientist at Crabcat, they're hilarious. Their dry sense of humor, just they crack me up. So when you're done listening to the Nerd Appropriate ones, go check out Perfect Squares.
Much better.
How haven't I heard about that? Do they not like promote it, or have I just not been looking in the right place? Because I feel like I should have known about this.
They only so far they've only done, you know, they're both pretty busy, so they've only done about four different podcasts. So I think they're going to start getting more regular in probably in the next few weeks. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely go. Just you can find it on iTunes or just search The Perfect Squares. Yeah, I mean, they're hilarious. I mean, yeah,
awesome.
Like crying laughter.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I'll definitely have to check that out and add that to my rotation of stuff. So.
Cool.
All right, so I am an unabashed fan of Avatar The Last Airbender from Nickelodeon, which was a fantastic, not the movie. The movie was a piece of trash that no one should have watched. But the cartoon that was on Nickelodeon was fantastic and is honestly one of the best like modern day kung fu things done, period. And it ended... God, I want to say probably a couple years ago it ended, maybe two. And they'd always said, oh, we're going to do another series, and it's going to be called Legend of Korra. And they didn't really tease too much about what it would be. And it has finally started. It's out now. You can watch it live on Nickelodeon, or I actually buy it on Amazon and watch it as it gets released every week. It follows the new Avatar. Her name is Korra. She's the generation after Aang. And it's just done... so well. These guys just craft great stories. If you were a big fan of the first series, there's a lot of like nudge, wink, wink. Characters show up from the first series. Some of them are dead, but some of them are still alive, and they show up from the first series. And there's new bending. There's metal bending and stuff now in the series. It's just.
Whoa.
Some angry dogs.
It's a new game. It's an iOS game.
Angry dogs.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. Did any of you got Hillary? Did you ever watch Avatar: Last Airbender, or did you ever watch?
No, I saw the movie.
You did. Did you like the movie? Did I just trash your sense of liking things?
No, I it was entertaining. It wasn't. It wasn't like, oh my god, this is the best movie I've ever seen. No,
I think it's one of those like if you were a fan of the cartoon, you hated the movie, and if you'd never seen the cartoon and you watched the movie, you're like, oh, okay, this was entertaining. Like,
Yeah, it was just okay.
Yeah. Well, I recommend the cartoon. It's very good. But the new series, Legend of Korra, is awesome. It's out. So go watch it.
Definitely. So I never finished Avatar The Last Airbender, but I did like the universe, and I did see a good number of the cartoon. How far after, in terms of the timeline, when does it take place?
It's about, what would I say? I mean, she's the next generation Avatar, and Katara's still alive. So it's probably about,
it's just about,
probably
one about generation.
50 years later.
Yeah. Okay.
That she is out, and they start her at the point, she's like probably in her teens, and she can already do three. She can already do fire, water, and earth. So she's learning airbending from Aang's son, who's pretty much one of the last airbenders that's alive, other than his kids and a couple others. It's just you don't really have to have seen the first one. They don't necessarily spoil it, but there are some things that you might not have as much, you know, background knowledge on if you didn't watch the first series.
What for someone that's never seen any of this before, what would the appeal be to like an older viewer? You said this was on Nickelodeon. So is it like the story or the action or
it's one of the guys from SpongeBob, and I want to say two of the guys from Family Guy decided they wanted to do a Kung Fu cartoon, and they wanted to be like as true to old school Kung Fu movies as they could. And they made, so they came up with this whole concept of doing Avatar The Last Airbender. And, you know, it's just the humor. I would rate it along the lines of a, you know, SpongeBob or something like that. If you're an adult, you'll still laugh at it. Like, the humor's still really good. It's not kid-based humor. There's some really serious, like, heartfelt moments, and especially in the first series. I mean, we're only two episodes in on the new one, so nothing super crazy has happened at this point. But a lot of, like, family dynamic and drama, and I mean, characters die. It's not like a kid's cartoon necessarily. It's just friendly enough for kids, I think, to watch and learn stuff from, like life lesson kind of stuff. It's just done very solidly. It's really great, and the animation is phenomenal. In HD, it looks amazing. So, what'd you say? Sorry, Hillary.
I said like Bambi.
Yes, like Bambi. They shoot Aang's mom in the face.
Yeah.
Oh, so sad.
That's not true. All right, so this next one I moved because I didn't want to talk straight for 15 minutes, but I did get it. I watched it Thursday night, Comic-Con episode 4, A Fan's Last Hope, right? Or Fan's Hope.
Just A Fan's Hope.
So I saw it, but I just talked for 5 minutes, so what do you guys think?
I just saw it as well, and I'm sure, Hillary, you've seen it as well.
I would be murdered if I hadn't.
yes. And okay, so I'm just going to gush about this movie for a few minutes here. I went to my first Comic-Con in 2000.
Real quick, it's a documentary about Comic-Con directed by Morgan Spurlock.
Yes.
Right, produced by Stan Lee and a bunch of other featured...
Joss Whedon. Yeah.
Kevin Smith. Is it Kevin Smith co-produced or no? Is he just...
I don't know if he co-produced.
I think he's just in it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyways, go ahead.
So my relationship with Comic-Con, I feel very strongly about the event. Like, I went to my first one in 2000. This year, going back, will be my 10th, so I've only missed a couple between 2000 and this year. And what this documentary does is perfectly captures what the event really is. When you tell people that haven't been to Comic-Con, about it, they don't understand. They're like, oh, you just go and hang out in a warehouse with a bunch of, you know, sweaty nerds for 4 days, and why would that be fun? But what it is it's a massive gathering of 125,000 super fans that are all fans of all different genres of science fiction and fantasy and, you know, comic books and movies, and everyone is there having a good time together and networking, and just it is the ultimate like nerd experience each and every year. And so this documentary captures, you know, what it does is it pulls very different people together and follows them for one Comic-Con and shows how this convention actually impacts and changes their lives. So it is a really, really positive, uplifting movie. You know, there's so many documentaries out now that are just incredibly dark. But this is a very, very positive, happy film. you know. Mm-hmm. What did you think about going in, Matt?
I wasn't really sure what it was all going to be about. I knew Crabcat was involved, and you know, I generally really like Morgan Spurlock's stuff. So I was like, oh, this will probably be pretty good. But I really loved how they did it. I loved how they followed five different sectors of the con. You know, you had the aspiring artists, you had the sellers who were there, you had, you know, you guys with the cosplay. I thought it was done really well, and the kind of interstitials with the people who've been going all the time, or are, you can even see like when they had some of the newer celebrities who probably never went to Comic-Con previously, but were like talking about it, and what it is now and what it's kind of become. It was really interesting. It's true. Like we've talked about this kind of subculture of, you know, geekdom or nerddom, whatever you want to call it, has become a major force in marketing and in how you're going to get a film out there or how you're going to get a new TV show out there. It's become this big pop culture phenomenon. And it was a really great take on it, I thought. And that guy, the artist, I can't remember his name, the guy who did the Hulk.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I hope his artwork is in Marvel soon, because his Hulk was phenomenal.
Yeah, he was great.
The Air Force guy or whatever. He was crazy good. So
he was very good. So Hillary.
Yes.
this is strange, because you're like BFFs with half the cast of the movie. So what was it like you watching this film and knowing already kind of what the folks at Crabcat, including yourself, go through, you know, to put these, you know, great costumes together and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it was very strange to see the movie and, you know, have it be a movie about these people that I work with all the time. So that alone was just kind of mind-blowing. But it was really cool to see how they portrayed Holly and her quest to do what she wants to do, creature design and costumes and, you know, mostly design work. I mean, she's an amazing artist in her own right. So it was just really cool to see how they positioned her that way. I think we were all a little bit frightened that knowing that it was a documentary. You know, we were kind of like, how is this going to get put together? You know, what is it going to look like? Because, you know, sometimes there's arguments behind the scenes. You know, things get stressful at cons, especially when, you know, we have big deadlines and things. So we were kind of like, well, I don't know what angle they're going to take. But, I mean, Morgan Spurlock is such a great guy. Everybody who, you know, the film crew and all that, I didn't actually get to meet any of them. But just hearing the stories, you know, it was all done very tastefully and very put together really well. So I think they captured the essence of why we are who we are. But yeah, I mean, obviously I wasn't in the movie. This was before my time. I actually joined Crabcat the month after they stopped filming. So but it's just been really, it's really cool. I think I love the idea that Comic-Con, like you said, isn't being shown as, you know, a place for a bunch of nerds or, you know, people who live in mom's basement go and hang out and, like, you know, drool over art and stuff. I mean, what it really is a bunch of people who are very driven and, you know, people who have goals, and it's a platform to get you to where you want to go. And if you're persistent enough and if you work hard enough, Comic-Con's the place that you can go to, you know, make your dreams happen. I mean, that's really what the movie's kind of about. I mean, even though Holly didn't win the grand prize, I mean, I think everything that's come out of
and how they didn't, that blows me away.
I know. But the thing is, it wasn't about winning that award. I mean, it's kind of like the battles that lead up to the Great War. I mean, I think she's doing things that, you know, her route to fame and success is so different than anyone else's, and it's truly based on her ability and her art. So I mean, it's kind of fantastic. I mean, it was definitely a luck thing that she got chosen. But her art has, you know, really made it so that she's a name for herself, and Crabcat is, you know, we're all supportive of that. So no, I thought it was really great. I think it was just, you know, for us to be like, wow, the stuff we do actually matters. And for Holly, you know, it's just a huge validation of the fact that she is so multi-talented.
I thought it was really great, because you never know with documentaries, like you said, that a lot of them take angles or they try to tell a story of some kind. And I thought it was really great. It seemed like they did it with no sense of irony, no sense of like, look at this, you know, like it was just kind of like, here's some talented people. You know, we've got, I thought it was cool that they did the two artists. They had the one guy who was obviously been doing this for a very long time and is very good at what he does. and got picked up for a job. And then they showed another reality, which is sometimes you show up and you're not ready yet. And people go like, hey, you know, this isn't bad, but come back when you're doing more. Yeah, and
absolutely.
And
it was
just
very realistic.
Yeah. It just was done with no sense of like, you know, inside jokey or anything like that. Yeah. It just was very straightforward about here's some stories and we're going to tell them about what happens at Comic-Con.
Right. Well, and I think the reason why it came out the way it did is because, you know, people like Morgan Spurlock and Joss Whedon and, you know, they are huge nerds and they love Comic-Con for what it is as well. Like they have been going there for years and years and years for their own various reasons. And they love fantasy and science fiction and comic books since they were little kids as well. So the last thing they're going to do is mock something that they're truly proud of.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have always, like, especially Joss Whedon, you know, they hold the guy up on a pedestal because he's not full of shit. He's always just been who he is. He makes great stuff. And he's a very honest and polite and nice guy. And people appreciate that, you know? Like, I'll never forget, I ran into Joss Whedon, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago on the floor, and he was just walking around by himself. And a nice long conversation with him. He took pictures with my wife and I and just had a nice long chat about, at that time, I think, like, Buffy or Angel or something like that. And he was just a dude. Yeah, just a dude on the floor. So anyway, Comic-Con Episode 4 of Fans Hope. It's phenomenal. If you haven't seen it yet, it's available on demand. It might actually still be floating around in a handful of theaters, I think.
Dude.
But it is available.
It's not just available on demand. It's like anywhere. It's on YouTube for $4. It's on Vudu for $7. It's on Xbox for like $8. It was on Amazon for $6. Like, literally, there is not a service. You cannot make an excuse for not seeing this movie. It is in any place at a relatively cheap price that you might want to get it.
Yes. And it is incredible and inspirational, and it is just awesome. So please go check it out.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
This last review, I like to talk about mobile games because I've been playing a lot of them on trains and on planes and automobiles. This last one I just picked up kind of by chance on my Kindle. I got a new Kindle Fire, which I love. And
I
was like, oh, God. I was like, I got it like, oh, maybe I'll like it, maybe I won't. And I never put the damn thing down. I use it constantly now.
It's the best thing ever.
Yes. Well, this game is available for free on it. And it is a pretty simple concept. You are a robot and you fight another robot.
I love it already.
And basically the mechanic is you have a sort of, oh shit, blanking on what it is. The things in Vegas. Slot machine. Thank you, sir.
Ding, ding, ding.
I kept doing the arm motion. I was waiting for somebody to get this. So you have three, you know, windows of a slot machine up in the top left. And you basically pick between spawning new guys that are part of your team, doing some kind of techie thing. Like you can hack the other team, generate a shield, or downgrade their power. And then the last one is weapons. So you actually fire like a beam, a laser beam, or you fire electric shocks, or you fire a microwave beam. And each one of the things has a different effect on the other team. So like a microwave is like a group shot. You'll fire it and it'll hit everybody. The shock will actually stop his other guys from fighting. Like they freak out and just kind of buzz for a minute. And then the laser beam is just like a really powerful laser beam. But I got totally hooked. You start playing and they give you a map of the world. And the story is that robots a little while ago took over the world and decided that humans were no longer necessary. And you're the last one fighting back against these robots with your own robot. And you have a big map with a bunch of points on it. And all the points are different levels of difficulty. And you just kind of like Risk, you're trying to take over the world like one little corner of the area at a time. And you fight the other robot. It is absolutely free. There is a pay mechanic, and it unlocks something called dueling, which allows you to upgrade your guy faster. But otherwise, you literally have to pay $0 for this. There's no reason to pay anything to get through the game. You can level up completely on your own. The artwork is awesome. It's like cartoony, but not cartoony at the same time. There's all these lighting effects they do. All the lasers look crazy and It just looks really slick. It runs really well on the Fire. I would assume it runs extremely well on the iPhone probably too, or even the Android. I haven't put it on my phone yet. And it's just fun. It's a really great time waster. It totally took over for Triple Town for me. So
Triple Town.
Yeah.
Cool, man. I will definitely download it and check it out.
But yeah, check it out. It's called Robotech. It's on iOS. It's on Android. I put it on my Fire, and I love the crap out of it. And it's a really simple mechanic, so it's fun to play.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with our Twitter question of the week, which is about dream or fantasy job. All right, we are back with our episode 56 Twitter question, which was, if you could have any fantasy job, what would it be and why? Real or totally not real? And we have a variety of answers here. So some people actually responded with what they wanted their dream job to be, and other people said, you know, I just want to be a superhero and stuff like that, which is totally fine, and it's exactly what we were looking for.
Hillary, so, did the Twitter wall people come and install your Twitter wall for you in your room?
Yeah, we each have one in our houses.
Lied to our listeners and say we have a wall.
We don't lie to them, Ash. We have a wall with Twitter responses on it behind us. We have the budget of G4 just on our podcast.
So, okay. So we always refer to our Twitter wall, which is a wall that in fake reality is constantly streaming all the replies we get from Twitter. So we do a podcast. We're like, well, let's look at our Twitter wall.
Yeah,
there is no real Twitter wall, but we.
What are you? You keep saying that there's real.
I'm telling.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. Oh. See.
Okay.
They made it. They did get to LA and install it.
See, Ash. Yeah, Hillary sees it. What's the problem here? Yeah. What's going on?
I don't know what Ash's problem is.
I've been indoctrinated. I don't see reality anymore.
So let's kick it off.
All right. So we have our good friend Michael Coles on Twitter at Michael Coles, and he says Batman. Oh, wait, it's supposed to be a job I don't already have. And I do have to say something really quick. This guy is one of the biggest badasses in multiplayer that I've ever played with. He is ridiculous. Like, he is like he's sort of like an evil general, though. He'll be like, you, go behind that barricade. This is exactly what you need to bring with you. And I'm like, okay. But then it works really well. So he's like kind of the guy you really want to bring you into combat. So... So it's kind of intimidating, but he's really, really good. So
He also cosplays as Shepard. So there you go.
Yeah, and he was at East as Shepard, and his costume was great. So thanks again, Michael Coles.
Benny Bedlam at CBR Bedlam. Or CDR. Yeah.
What?
Says sorry, I didn't read it right. At CDR.
The wall's pretty big.
Yeah.
Bedlam.
Our wall's broken.
He says, Ivan Strahovski's agent. Just kidding. A bajillionaire CEO of the next console.
Yeah, he's aiming high. Aiming high. Like, why not aim high, right?
So he's just going to become a CEO of a console.
Yes.
I'm CEO of my Xbox.
Aren't we all CEOs of our Xboxes? When you really boil it down, we are all the CEOs. Own Xbox 360 consoles.
I think he means probably of Microsoft.
Oh, excellent.
Or Sony. I wouldn't want to be Sony's CEO right now, though, I'll be honest with you. So we'll go Microsoft. I'm going to give him Microsoft.
Yeah, good old Killer C says, frankly, I'd love to be a voice actor. I think that would be a great profession in this day and age of quality voice acting in video games.
And I will tell you, through experience that my wife has had, it's not, I mean, yes, you're not going to be on BioWare's next game immediately, but voice acting is feasible to break into. There are studios probably in the city that you live in that do voice acting for commercials and all that kind of stuff, even locally. So if you're super interested in it, I would say, like, kind of start doing it. Like, go to studios and say, you know, here's my resume. I want to do this. I want to get into voice acting. And it's not infeasible. It is possible, Kittler C. Do it, Kittler C.
Do it.
Do it.
Hillary, would you like to read the next one?
I would. Okay, so Taryn Casey, and that's at Taryn Casey, Terran Casey, Casey. Professional musician and songwriter. Yes, do it. Come to LA.
Absolutely.
Or New York.
He's actually Taryn Casey. He works QA for Infinity Ward right now. That's what he does.
He's
one of the duty boys, as I like to call them.
Well, I can tell you. Boys. I can tell you from Scott and I's experience, being a musician is like a glamorous lifestyle full of lots of money and things that are fantastic.
Are you the bajillionaire of your own console?
I am currently the bajillionaire of my own console.
You guys know that Hillary sings, right?
I do. Yeah.
What?
Yep. It might be our closing music on the way out.
Yeah.
How about podcast. Not?
So I'll sing on the way out.
Good. I really liked it.
Next up is Brandon Cash 23. He says, play-by-play sports announcers, my dream job has been since I was a kid. That'd be kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Except for I'm really bad at sports, so I'd be like, and the guy hit that round thing and ran to that strange shape.
Scott, didn't we have a joke where we were going to make Ash watch a football game with us?
And... Yeah, I think for our longtime listeners, one of our original goals of our endeavor here was to actually do like a video channel. And I think one of the bits that we were going to do on the video channel was watch. We can't actually put live sports on TV because we would be sued. But what we were going to do is just put a camera on Ash and let him do sports commentary on the TV for sports that he doesn't watch or understand. I think it would be hilarious.
How about golf?
Oh, yeah. God.
I worked at the Golf Channel for a little while, so I can't do that.
So,
jobs.
Scott, what is your dream job?
I can't really think of anything. I've been thinking about this for a couple of days, and I'm at a loss right now. I've been reading a lot of Ender's Game. Can I be Speaker for the Dead? I don't know.
Yeah, hell yeah. You can be Speaker
like
for the Dead.
A child military strategist progeny. I have no idea.
So you're not only getting a new job, but you are completely transforming into a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah, I'll be Ender Wiggin. Can that be my job?
Sure.
All he has to do is shave his beard.
How did you have that so fast? That was ridiculous.
It's sitting on my desk.
Oh, not the slide whistle.
Oh, God.
Things are truly falling apart.
So our good friend Mike Agar,
Agar
says, easy, mech pilot.
That'd be pretty cool. I don't blame him. If you can get paid for being a mech pilot, what's cooler than that?
I mean, are we talking about like Robot Jocks mech pilot or Steel Battalion mech pilot? Because there's a clear difference there.
I want Robot Jocks.
Yeah.
I would take any kind of robot that could move me around. I mean, why you guys are being picky about this.
Well, because
Hillary, let's ask Hillary since she is, you know, special. And you guys clearly are not.
Wow.
If you could pilot a giant robot, Hillary, what would it look like?
Ooh, I'm thinking, wow.
That's a
loaded question. That's loaded. Okay. I'm going to go back to the days of Aliens. Remember the part where Sigourney Weaver gets into the thing and she's get away from her, you bitch. You know that part?
Yeah.
Oh, the power loader. Okay.
The power loader. I want to do that and I want to fight some aliens.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
I'm with you on that one.
That may be closer than you think, that power loader.
Really?
Oh, Scott knows something.
He has one. He has a power loader back at home.
I've read things.
Does it have like a welding tool on there too?
No. It's for heavy lifting, but I mean, it's close. It's pretty close.
Can I just say on the record that welding tool was pretty damn puny? Like, there's this huge power loader that powers up that welding tool. And it's like a Zippo lighter.
Yeah, but at least it got the mouth and mouth to like stop biting at her.
That's true.
Is that called, the mouth and mouth? Do you guys know what that is?
Can we just call it the mouth and mouth?
I'm going to go with mouth and mouth, yeah.
It reminds me of the character from Family Guy, you know? The guy with the guy with the mustache, and he's like, and then my little mouth is going to eat you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you does the alien. That is pretty fantastic.
Amazing.
Awesome.
Hillary, you know this guy. Do the next one.
Yeah, I do. So Jimmy, a.k.a. Drachmarth, and he says, a tyrannical dictator because I'm a tyrannical dictator. Okay.
I believe that.
I think that's Saren's influence on him. If you don't know, he's the guy who was at PAX East who had a Saren puppet.
Yeah.
So he was going around indoctrinating people the entire
weekend.
He's
indoctrinated.
I think he is. He's succumbed to his own madness.
Yeah, but the way he was indoctrinating people at PAX was by hugging them with a puppet, which was probably the nicest way you could ever indoctrinate somebody. So,
hey, whatever it's works, true. Man.
Thanks for all the puppet hugs.
Sometimes hugs will get more than punches.
True. So, Matt, let me ask you.
Oh,
it's a life lesson.
I'm going to ask you the serious question. What would be your dream job, fantastic or otherwise?
Everybody picks these like weird areas where we've talked about this before, where we give them like the chance to be anything, like do something, be anything. And they're like, I will do something that I could easily die during. I don't understand that impulse. Like, I want to live when zombies are running around. I'm like, no, I don't. That sounds horrible. Or I want to be a mech pilot. It's like, you're getting missiles shot at you constantly. Why would you want to do that? So if I could be anything, I think I would be my real dream job. This is, you guys want to get emotional? My real one?
Uh-oh.
No, it's serious. This is a real thing.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to get quiet. Music. I'm going to get quiet.
Let's get in close real quick.
Am I gonna have to sing voice to men to you?
Guys, my real dream job is I want to make furniture. No, I want to be a carpenter. I like making things with wood. I like making
Jesus.
Furniture.
That's awesome. Real thing. Yeah, you're like Jesus.
I want to be Jesus. I don't know if you said that as an exclamation or you said that as that's what my
No, Jesus that's you want to be Jesus.
I do. Yeah. I want to heal the sick with my hands and. But no, that's real. That actually is true. I enjoy making things, and I would live in a cabin somewhere and make furniture for a living with tons of internet and a big TV.
And then you can start your side podcast, which is World of Woodcraft.
Yes, World of
Woodcraft.
That's an old. Really, that's a callback.
I really want that.
It's a callback.
Like it's already been trademarked, so no one can steal that idea.
Do you mail it to yourself?
I mailed it to myself. Stamp on it. I just wrote
the only real way to copyright things.
I wrote World of Woodcraft on a 3x5 note card and I mailed it to myself. So it's ours now.
All right, let's move on. Anyways, I don't have a fantastical one. I tried to think of a funny fantastical one and I really couldn't. So
awesome.
I'll be Jesus.
Okay. That works.
Jesus.
Next up is Carlo, who is Platinum Fist, written lead speak. It says something similar to Anthony Bourdain's gig, lots of cool food and travel, or a job directly related to gaming tech. A lot of people actually replied with the Anthony Bourdain's thing, and that is, I cannot blame you, traveling the world and eating good food sounds like an amazing plan.
Yeah.
And a job in game tech, hell yeah, why not? Go for it. Please do it.
I think the game tech one's probably more realistic than the Anthony Bourdain one.
Anything can happen, you know? He's a good writer and he likes to eat good food. Just keep doing it.
And he was a chef for 10 years.
Kyle McHenry, which is Kyle Max 6, says post-apocalyptic postman. I don't want to be Fallout's courier or Kevin Costner. I just want to deliver mail for the survivors. I think that's highly achievable. I think you can do that. So more power to you. I hope you deliver on Saturdays because I like getting stuff on the weekends. I don't know what else to say about that. I think it's a great job. I wonder if he would ride horseback, or if there would be some kind of like hovercraft vehicle or teleporting system. Or
what if he's in a mech?
He could deliver
mail in a mech.
He could deliver mail in a mech. I would assume. I guess he's assuming that in the future we don't have access to digital messaging systems anymore. So. I think there's a lot of you can read into this statement quite a bit and try to figure out, you know, what his future is going to be like. His vision of the future, I guess I should say, as far as the apocalypse goes. You guys follow me here? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, yeah. We're totally with you. It's exciting.
I hear you.
Good. So,
a lot of people
next
will
up.
See me in the apocalypse, yeah.
God, what is happening?
I don't know. We're falling apart.
We're so close.
There's a lot of editing
end.
That goes into these, Hillary. We're sorry.
So, our PAX buddy Cohen at Malaflam says, a researcher on a starship exploring the universe, being the first to see new worlds and pioneering adventures.
That's awesome.
I'll take it.
Cohen loves the stars, so love to.
I wonder what kind, is he in a Star Trek universe or a Mass Effect or a Star Wars?
I don't know. We'll have to ask him because I don't know. He wasn't very clear. Yeah, all of the above. There you go.
Okay, so Midtown 583. Says pilot of the Normandy, sans brittle legs, hard-ons for cyborgs, and I wouldn't run away from an epic space battle.
Ooh,
oh.
Ouch.
Well, I'm so just going to leave that one alone and just say that Joker is my brother, so that's awesome.
Yes, for those of you that weren't aware, Hillary is actually in Mass Effect 3. If you do, if you talk to Joker a lot, he will mention Hillary, his sister, and refer to her as Gunny, and it's pretty awesome because it is an Easter egg. starring our friend Hillary here. So,
oh, wow. Yay.
They put her in the game for being
awesome. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
Yay! Yeah. I'm also
and
in
I
the
made
credits.
The joke, well, they named Ash after me, and she was like, shut up, they did not.
So, Hillary, what is your answer?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Let's delve into the depths of Hillary Heskett Shapiro.
Wow. Let's see. I really like, okay, in the real world, I think doing something cool for BioWare, it would be a cool dream job. But in the fantasy world, I want to raise dragons.
Awesome.
Oh,
I want
all
to
right.
be like Game of Thrones, and except not the hardship part, but the raising of dragons would be
I was going to
awesome.
Put you. I was going to put you in the Harry Potter world where
you'd be like one of the Weasley brothers.
Yeah. One of the Weasley brothers.
No, I'm Ravenclaw all the way.
Oh,
nice.
She's
nice.
Got a house and everything.
I apologize.
No.
Nice. So you're a Harry Potter fan as well?
Of course. Who isn't a Harry Potter fan?
Yeah, seriously.
He's like the long-lost member of this podcast. We may have to brand you and lock you in the cage for next week.
Well, I already have the Twitter wall. You know, what do you need?
Yeah, I mean, we spent so much money installing the Twitter wall.
That was a large investment.
We're not going to just uninstall it, you know?
Indeed.
Seriously. Costs a lot to ship.
Natalie, our good buddy Natalie, who's done some writing for us on the site, she says she wants to be ruler of the Galactic Empire, also known as the Space Pope. Pound, join the dark side.
I would refer to her as Space Pope happily. That is the best title ever created.
Yes. Let's call her Space Pope from now on. She'll probably like that.
That's
Do you think even when Space Pope comes to your planet, she's like in like a Durasteel kind of, you know, car bubble machine so that nobody tries to...
I was more worried about what kind of hat the Space Pope wears.
Oh, like if it's a futuristic, like technological hat.
Is it even taller, you think, than the regular Pope's hat? Like it just keeps, it's like a 6 foot high hat that just sits on top of the Space Pope's head.
We're gonna have picketers outside of our
hat. <Hey. laughs>
You're talking about the Pope and calling Matt Jesus.
No, we're talking about the Space Pope.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay.
So, Terry Mason at Talarin says, Warcaster, so I could give my warjacks cute names and force others to use them.
Does anyone know what a warcaster is?
I was hoping somebody knew.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. I don't know what a warcaster is. Do I lose nerd cred for not knowing that?
I think we all just lost nerd cred.
Yeah, we all did.
Well, it's hard to know something about everything. You know,
That's true. We
do the best we can. And we still read the...
For the record, I made a mistake earlier. It's Ivy from Soul Calibur, not Dead or Alive. So I lost
the
credit there.
And I let it go. Oh.
You shouldn't have let it go. I would have been like, you're right.
Sarah McCharge, Archangel, amazing artist, also a member of Team Vanguard. And she, too, wants Anthony Bourdain's job. She says she wants to fly all over the world and eat food. Yeah, sign me up.
So we're closing it out with Ash.
Oh, okay. So real dream job is I'd like to do anything creative. I screwed up when I was younger and I psyched myself out because I always wanted to do something creative. Like when I first went to school, it was for journalism and then for film. And then I got discouraged and I kind of gave up. And then I went into a more professional sort of industry. And now I kind of regret doing that because I've always really enjoyed doing things creative. So anything creative that can actually give me money, I will do. That's the problem. I don't really know exactly what that is yet, but something. And, you know, so something hopefully in the games industry where I get to be creative and have fun. That's what I want to do. In terms of fantasy stuff, I'd love to be a starship captain of some sort and go on amazing adventures and bed alien ladies. You know what I'm saying?
You just need to. You can start by building a dreamatorium and then just go from there.
Yeah.
I mean, why doesn't everybody. Between the fantasy world. Well, Hillary, you went fantasy world versus like sci fi, like space world. I feel like the space world.
I'm playing The Witcher right now.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I was going to say, like, space.
Game of Thrones.
Space world, you have, like. Everything's awesome, you know? Like, you get, like, food and it's easy to get and you got, like, everything's great. And the fantasy world is like, you gotta go...
But all you have to do is press the A button.
Oh!
So easy.
Yeah. I was unaware.
Because I'm a CEO of my console, man.
All right.
I'm a billionaire.
whatever you demand comes
this
right to you.
This poor guy is like being mocked consistently.
We're not mocking him. I think it's awesome. He wants to be the owner of Microsoft. I clarified for him. Yes. I'm just saying that CEO of a console is pretty awesome.
It is. I fully agree with that.
Do you not treat your console like you're the CEO of it when you yell at it? When you're like, Xbox, play me, you know, Daily Show, Episode 4. And it's like, yes, sir. And then it plays.
Yeah,
except for whatever reason, that command just doesn't work.
It does not work.
Yeah, not for Daily Shows.
All right, so that wraps up Episode 56 of the Rated NA podcast. Okay, so let's tell this quick story. We've got to talk about Not My Nuts.
Get it out.
So Hillary, Scott, and I were playing a multiplayer match, Mass Effect multiplayer, and we couldn't find a fourth, which was weird because there's always somebody on. So we're like, well, let's just grab a random dude. And let's just grab a random dude. That sounds really bad. So let's just grab a random player and pull him into the match with us, which is always risky because you never know who you're going to get. Yep. So we pull in a fellow, and it turns out his name is Not My Nuts. And so for the next literally the kid's gamer tag is Not My Nuts. So everyone, first of all, you should all go on the internet and on Xbox Live
friend
Not My Nuts, because it turns out he is quite a capable player. Okay. So for the next hour, it was basically an hour of consistent Not My Nuts jokes. So you know, he would fall down and we'd go, oh no, Not My Nuts have fallen down. But it never made any sense. But at the time, it was really, really funny. And, like, you know, would there be, like, a pile? Like, we'd all die in a big pile. Go, oh, Not My Nuts is on my face. and it was just, you know, we were about 7 years old that night. But so since then, Hillary, what did you do? What did you do with Not My Nuts?
We're actually friends on XBL now. So, yes. And he's very good player. So I would definitely Not My Nuts as a player. Yeah. So go friend him. He's awesome. And he'll get a bunch of friend requests and it'll be awesome because he was creative enough to come up with a great name.
Yeah. So we don't know anything about the real Not My Nuts.
No.
We don't know
the real Not My Nuts.
Yeah. We don't know, like, if he's, you know, a teenager, if it's an old man nuts. We don't know. We don't know the age.
Could be
of
a
not
girl
nuts.
For all we know. She's I don't have nuts.
That's true, because Not My Nuts has not spoken over live yet, so it's a great mystery. Someone unraveled the truth of Not My Nuts, and then we'll find out.
I think that Not My Nuts is a CG hologram that appears at Coachella. That's what my theory is about Not My Nuts.
Scott snuck a Coachella joke in.
Heyo.
I watched that video. It was pretty good. All right, so let's do the closeout here. As always. This is episode 56.
Let's do the closeout?
Let's do the closeout. Don't we do a closeout?
Not My Nuts is down.
We don't announce it.
We don't announce it?
Well, I would like to say, Hillary, thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yay!
You are welcome on whenever you would like.
Yeah,
I did a hand gesture there.
Yes. And let me just say, don't tell my wife this, but having Hillary on the podcast is increasing my galactic readiness level so much. My galactic readiness level is just...
You know, Ash,
right now.
We literally almost made it through an entire podcast without you making one of the worst jokes that we've heard all day long.
Wow.
I'm just saying that having Hillary on the podcast increases our podcast galactic readiness level. It makes it larger, right?
Wow. Not My Nuts.
Not My Nuts.
I'm not. You can
That's
see I'm
response
not even
to everything.
I'm not responding
like,
to
I was
this.
Just abused by Nerdappropriate. I'm never coming back. All right. In reality, episode 56, Rated NA podcast. You guys can always follow us at Nerdappropriate on Twitter. We have a Facebook page.
/ Nerdappropriate.
Yes. And what else, guys? What else do we have?
You can email us at ashscottormatt@nerdappropriate.com. You can go to the website. We have a brand new fancy website with new fancy features popping up all the time. So check that out.
Yeah. Sweet. And Hillary, where can people contact you if they want to know more about your secrets?
My secrets. You can follow me on Twitter at Hillary Heskett, and that's Hillary with one L, Heskett with two T's. Or you can find me on Facebook or LinkedIn. I'm pretty easy to find. So you can
How
find
do you
me
use LinkedIn? LinkedIn's a confusing place to me.
Okay.
I love LinkedIn.
All right. Scott's going to murder us. He just left. Scott just left the podcast.
He's like, I thought we were done, guys.
Oh, Oh, God. Oh. All right. That's it for the podcast. Thank you, everybody. We're out.